102.3 FM.
Okay, excellent. So you're listening to Radio Korama, 102.3 FM. We've had quite a day today visiting Camper Alpayim Ushmon Ashrei. So special broadcast all day long. We have Zimriya this evening. I have a special guest here in the studio. I'm so happy to welcome him. William, give us your whole name. Tell us who you are.
Hi, thanks for having me today. I am very honored to be here. This is actually my first time being in a Jewish camp. My name is William Mervers. I come from Iran. I was born and raised in Tehran, the capital city.
So that's pretty interesting. So you were introduced to me by Rabbi Kalmanovsky. So nice. I'm so happy he introduced you. So you're from Tehran.
Correct.
And how did you, so what are you doing here? How did you get to the U.S.? And how did your journey bring you to Camp Ramada, Wingdale, New York?
So that's a lot of story, but I can go step by step. I met Rabbi Jeremy at the Anshei Chesed Synagogue because he was holding this beautiful interfaith iftar dinner for the Muslim community and refugees. And I was also there because I have one thing in common. I'm not Muslim, but I am a refugee here. Because of my Jewish identity, I am seeking asylum in the United States because I was persecuted back in Iran and I was under home arrest for a little bit.
So how old are you now?
I am 24.
So you're born in Tehran. What was your childhood like? Happy parents?
My name is actually, my given name is Reza, which means happy and satisfied, which I kind of can't find happiness back in my childhood because since I was conscious enough to understand the world surrounding me, I discovered Judaism. And by then, I was around 12, 13 years old, and I had a hard time convincing my parents that Judaism is my way, and I want to learn about it, I want to study about it. So I went through a lot of hardships in my path to Judaism, and when I discovered different aspects of Judaism, I was so interested in this faith, and the first thing that caught my attention was the Shabbat, the concept of by Yom Haba, or the day to come, that really fascinates me, that we have to sanctify this day as we are and created an image of God. We are gods on earth. So we have to rest on the seventh day as the Lord rested.
But when you say you were conscious of a Jewish presence and this was something that called to you, I mean, There are so few Jews in Tehran. Am I correct on that?
Correct.
I mean, how would that even be in your consciousness?
There are 10,000 to 15,000 Jews still living in Iran, mostly in the capital city, but they're not really identifiable because they don't wear kippot outside in public. But still, in the middle school that I was going, there was a friend of mine who was Christian. And he gave me a Bible, and with that Bible, I discovered more about the Old Testament, which was older than the New Testament. And he told me that if you want to know how we got here, you have to study that book. So that's when I tried to study more about the Old Testament and the Torah.
So you grew up in a Christian community, is that correct?
I grew up in a Muslim family, but I was going to school where I had 10 Christian friends.
Isn't that something? So you're growing up, somehow you become aware of Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know any Jews specifically?
I did not know anyone because, as I said, there are only 10 to 15,000 Jews left in Iran, and they're not really well identified because they live in certain neighborhoods. I met one Jewish friend back in the last year of my middle school. But that was the only friend that I had who was Jewish. But here in New York, I have a lot of Persian Jewish friends.
Right, but so you're a kid. You're in Tehran. Somehow get to the unique point where Judaism is somehow calling to you. You don't know any Jews, for the most part. Somehow it's calling to you. And what age is this? You announce to your parents, hey, look, I know I'm a Muslim, but I think Judaism is the way for me. Mm-hmm. So they must have said, oh, yeah, great.
They did not, obviously, because my family is a very not very much conservative, but they are observant Muslims. And, of course, it was a shock for them to see their oldest son being not practicing Islam and practicing other religions. To them, it was apostasy. And apostasy in Iran, by the Islamic Republic of Iran's law under the Ayatollah, is punishable by death. So that was kind of intense for me. And when I was 15, I started to keep kosher. I couldn't start keeping Shabbat because Saturday is the first day of the week in Iran. I had to go to work. I had to go to school. And I couldn't really be observant of Shabbat, but I was observant of kashrut laws by being vegetarian.
So what age are we talking about?
The time that I started keeping kosher was about 15.
So you're in Tehran, 15. And then at some point, you end up in the United States.
It was not long ago, it was 6 months ago, that because of some tensions that I had in the country, I had to leave immediately. And I left Iran with just a suitcase full of my warm clothes and my items related to my religion that I had. For example, my sirur, my talit, my kippot, my menorah, and my Shabbat candles that I used to light on Friday nights. And I just put them back. Put them in my suitcase and I just get out of the country because it was a little bit intense and the authorities were about to arrest me.
How did you even get these items, a kippah, a sidur? Where did you get them?
There are synagogues in Tehran. There are three active synagogues in Tehran, but of course I was not allowed there because the rabbis are Orthodox, traditional Orthodox, so I was not allowed there, and they wouldn't really accept conversions. Also, on the other hand, they were afraid of the government because they were under surveillance, so they were afraid of their lives, and they thought that it would jeopardize their synagogue and the community. But there were some antique shops or places in the Jewish neighborhoods that I could buy some of these, which I did. And I bought a menorah for myself for Hanukkah, and I bought Shabbat candles and a kippah.
But who even told you about Hanukkah, how to observe it, how to light candles?
I was just studying myself by myself from internet and like Googling stuff and asking some friends outside Iran. So I was traveling since I was 20 years old. I was traveling abroad. Because I was working with an organization that gave me this platform of going on exchange and traveling around the world. And I was meeting a lot of different people with different backgrounds. So I had friends who were helping me, answering my questions.
So in Iran, so you had this opportunity to leave the country, to come back, to join up with an organization. Do you want to mention the name of the organization?
Or? No.
Okay, fine.
Not, yeah.
So I also understand there are going to be questions that I ask you that, you know, maybe better for you not to answer right now, mm-hmm. And that's fine. And I'm going to just try to be cognizant of that. So you were able as Iranian to get in and out of the country. You're doing your own thing. You're with organizations doing things outside of the country. Everyone's okay. But then something changed in Iran for you, right?
Correct. It wasn't very easy to get out of the country. I was heavily wetted every time that I was leaving the country. Like, where are you going? With who are you going? What is the purpose of this trip? Who is accompanying you? So I was under surveillance, so I had to keep my Jewish identity hidden. And also with my family, they were not really happy about this, so I also had to keep that secret from my family as well. When I was 21 years old, I met a woman, this young lady who was my age. We were introduced to each other through the organization that we were working, and we thought that we are a perfect match for each other so that we can start a family. And she comes from a Muslim family. But unfortunately, eventually, after 2 years of living together, we thought that this is not the right place to be. This is not something that would work out. So this secret that I had shared with her was released to her parents and to the authorities. And that's the time that I was threatened by her family that they will put me behind bars and I had to leave the country. That's how things got a little bit out of control and I had to leave.
The secret that you shared, did you that's a secret. You know, we're not going to discuss...
The secret of my Jewish identity that was shared with her was revealed to her parents.
To her parents.
So I was keeping this Jewish identity with myself, and when we moved into our new home, to our new family, I was keeping Shabbat, I was keeping Kashrut, I was lighting Friday night candles and everything. We were having a happy life in my perspective, but eventually at one point I felt like she's not very much happy about it. She's not willing to live with a Jew.
The government in Iran, I mean, I'm no expert in this. Everything is so complex. But, and I understand there, you know, the geopolitical issues, Iran, United States, Israel, it's all a mess. But I really didn't, so the government in Iran, besides being anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, anti-American, and vice versa. So there's really they actually have a problem with Jews in particular. The government really cares would they care if you were a Christian becoming a Jew? Are they giving just the Jews, the few Jews that are left there, a hard time?
No, the issue is with people who want to convert from Islam to any other religion. So if a Muslim born wants to convert to Judaism, to Christianity, to any other religion, or they want to become atheist, for example, that is not acceptable by law, and they can't publicly announce that. If they do, they will be accused of apostasy, and they will be given a six-month time to come back to Islam, to identify as a Muslim. And if they don't, they will be publicly executed, because the constitution in Islamic Republic of Iran is based on the Sharia law, and that's what Islam believes should happen to converts.
So it sounds like I'm not going to ask you the details about getting out of Iran and getting to the United States, although that sounds like an interesting story. But you get yourself here to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And what age is that now, and when was that?
It was 6 months ago that I arrived at the in New York in the United States.
And you said your age is now?
I'm 24 now.
So you're 24. You tell your parents you're leaving.
I did not tell anyone that I'm leaving. 1 week after I left, I left for Armenia first, because that was the first country that I could go. And from there, I went to Georgia to obtain a U.S. visa. When I received my U.S. visa, I flew to New York, but it wasn't a direct flight. On November 8th, I boarded the plane, and on November 9th, I arrived at JFK. There was some tragic times for immigrants and refugees, I believe.
Right. And, wow, so that was just the time that our current president, there were issues, a lot of...
Correct.
Immigrants were getting caught up at the airport. Did you come just before that, or just
I came just
that?
Before that. I came right on November 9th when Donald Trump became president-elect. So there was a week or two before the travel ban went into effect.
An interview here at Konkorama with William. I don't know your last name.
Mervaz is my last name.
Mervaz. So you, so you find yourself here in the United States. So you're here about 7-8 months.
Correct. And I have achieved a lot of things here. I appreciate the United States of America as being the land of opportunities. And I have found myself a home, a lot of friends, new families, and the most recent thing that I have achieved in the United States is my college. I have been accepted to Columbia University as of last week, Wednesday, and I'm very much excited about it. And I'm so happy to continue my education in the field of human rights because I believe I am a victim of violation of human rights.
Wow, amazing. So you hear, your English is really so great.
Thank you.
How did that happen?
My father always encouraged me to study English, and I was always passionate about different languages and cultures, but most of it you can blame it on Hollywood.
So you're here just a few short months, and you end up applying to Columbia, being accepted. That is something. They have scholarships for you, or they're going to make it possible?
We're still working on that case, but probably not.
Probably not.
Probably no scholarship because of my current status, because I'm still in the process of seeking asylum, and I have not been granted asylum, so I won't be eligible for any FAFSA or federal or governmental scholarships. Maybe if the school have some private scholarships, that would work out. If not, I have to revise and rethink my decision if I want to continue my education at Columbia or not, because of financial issues.
So I'm not asking you where you're living. You're living with a family.
Yes.
You're involved in a synagogue.
I am involved in a synagogue. For Friday nights, I go to Town and Village in Lower East Side, which is a very nice and welcoming synagogue that I went when I came here. That was the first synagogue that I went to.
For full disclosure, Town and Village Synagogue is the synagogue I and my family go to.
Amazing.
I look forward to seeing you there on Shabbat.
Same here.
what a story. I don't know where even to begin. So when you applied to Columbia, I mean, you were not the typical applicant. How did that work out?
I wrote them a 7-page essay, so I think that was the thing that worked out, because in the beginning I didn't have my transcripts or my educational background, because the Iranian government was refusing to release my transcripts from college, and I studied linguistics and French interpretation back in Iran. But fortunately, I got into college, and I'm so glad that they accepted this, and I'm honored to step into Columbia University, where so many famous and successful people have studied, who have impacted the world.
So you're actually, they accepted you even without the official transcripts?
Yes, I had some screenshots of my college transcripts from the website before they fire me, before they terminate my student website or username and password on that. But right now I do have my transcript, because with the help of my friends and my brother, I could convince the government to release those documents. So right now I have them, and I'm going to present them to the university.
So you're at this time an Iranian citizen?
Correct. I still hold a valid Iranian passport.
Let's say you decided, all right, listen, I'm going to go back now. Would that be a problem?
No.
You could go back?
I cannot go back, obviously, no. Because I am going through a conversion process to obtain this Jewish identity that I always felt having it. And in that case, I cannot be able to go back because the Iranian government would arrest me on site.
So how did you end up here in camp with us, with Rabbi Kamenovsky?
As I said, I met Rabbi Kamenovsky in his beautiful interfaith event at the synagogue, Anshe Chesed Synagogue, and then he heard my story, and he was also fascinated, and he invited me to the camp. I was so honored to be here, which I spent my Shabbat here, which I believe so far it was the most fulfilled Shabbat of my life.
Well, I feel the same way being here. It is a very special Shabbat, and it made it more special having you us here. William, I want to thank you so, so much for joining us here on Radio Kol Ramah. And I know Columbia is going to be very lucky to have you. Columbia College happens to be my alma mater. And it's wonderful that you're embarking on this fantastic, fantastic journey, and I feel blessed that I know I'll be seeing you at Shul, at Amazing. Town and Village. And who knows, maybe you'll get to spend more time up here at camp in the future and share with our Chanichim and staff your very, very amazing journey, which is really just in its infancy, just starting. So thank you for joining us here, and look forward to seeing you again in the studio. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you very much for having me here. It's a pleasure. Kol Rama 102.3 FM.